to Dad.
Welcome to the Talk to Dad podcast, episode 105.
Hello.
I've got Henry here with me.
Hello.
We're all here.
I also have Allison.
Hi.
Also known as Mom.
Yep.
And we just got back from vacation. We went on a surprise vacation. On Monday, we left for Seattle. And we also went to Portland. And then we came home. Henry, did you know anything about this vacation before Monday morning?
No, I didn't believe you when you told me.
Yeah, so William and Phoebe were gone on a trip with our church group, and that meant that Mom and me and Henry were home alone. And so we figured it might be a good time to just head off somewhere.
Yeah.
So Mom and I planned a vacation. We didn't tell anybody, including Henry, until Monday morning. We woke him up and said, hey, where should we go today?
Yeah, and Mom was just asking, hey, where do you want to go? I was like, I don't know about that. And then you're like, and then I think it was you who said, we should go to Seattle. And Mom said, it's kind of far away. And then they revealed that you're actually going on vacation to Seattle.
You were like, yeah, let's go somewhere. Let's go. And I think you were thinking, like, get in the car and drive somewhere.
Maybe go to the pool.
Or maybe go to, like, Dallas or something.
Yeah. Like a staycation.
But instead, we threw you in the car. We'd already packed your bag, drove to the airport.
I guess it makes sense that you already packed my bag, because I was looking at my drawers and I was like, why do I have so little clothes in here?
Well, all of your clothes had gone through the wash, too. So, like, a lot of it was in the laundry baskets in my room.
And, yeah, I guess it was only, like, two sets of clothes.
Yeah.
But anyways, we
got on an airplane, flew all the way to Seattle.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Seattle?
It was really cool. There's a lot of, like, just cool stuff there, like the glass garden.
Yeah, so we we had an apartment there. Kind of like a hotel, but it was an apartment building, and it was sort of like an Airbnb, even though it wasn't Airbnb. But anyway, it was an apartment that kind of looked out over the what they call the Puget Sound. So it was kind of pretty close to the water, maybe only a few blocks from the water. And that was one of the coolest things about it. It was like when you open the door of the apartment, you could see out all the windows over the Puget Sound. That was kind of cool.
It was a great view. Really great view.
And it was a good location because it was sort of halfway between downtown and the area called Seattle Center, which is where the Space Needle is. And the Chihuly Museum and Gardens, that's what you're talking about with the glass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
had really
there's
cool
an artist
glass
named Chihuly. What's Chihuly's first name? It's like
Dale.
Dale, that's Dale. Right. I was going to say Dave, but I knew that wasn't quite right. Dale Chihuly. She's like an artist that works mainly in glass, and he blows these glass sculptures that look like, some of them look kind of like weird and surreal, and sometimes they kind of look like coral reefs.
Or flowers or other kind of things in nature, aliens almost. Yeah, they look like things in nature, except kind of unnatural.
Or like flowers.
Yeah. Unnatural nature.
Mm-hmm. They remind me of, there used to be this room in the Natural History Museum where I grew up. The old one. They redid the museum and it's different now. But there was this dark room growing up where you would go in and they had all these underwater things that were luminescent and like different things in nature that were luminescent, like things that would hang out at the bottom of the ocean where it's super dark. And it was just really cool. But there parts of the exhibit were indoors and in dark rooms like that and kind of lit. And they reminded me of that.
Yeah. So if you don't know what we're talking about, Google Chihuly. I believe it's C-H-I-H-U-L-Y. U-L-E-Y?
No. U-L-Y.
C-H-I-L...
C-H-I-H-U-L-Y.
I can't spell in my Chihuly. Head sometimes. Chihuly. Just like it sounds. But really cool. Like, and the museum they have, I think, is the biggest collection because he's from the Seattle area. So it's the biggest collection of his stuff. Other museums have like a little bit of his stuff, but it's like this huge collection of Chihuly sculptures. That was pretty cool. What else was cool that we saw?
We also saw the Pop Culture Museum.
Yeah, the Museum of Pop Culture, which was also by the Space Needle. And they had one of the coolest exhibits while we were there. And what was that?
That was the Marvel exhibit.
Yeah, there was a big exhibit dedicated to Marvel. So it was like Marvel comic books and Marvel movies. And they had like some of the original costumes from like Black Panther and yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy and
some of the
Spider-Man.
some of the original comic strips and like explanations and like exhibits about kind of how some of those were created and where they came from.
And like all the characters, like, you know, Doctor Strange and Iron Man and just like all these different, like each room was kind of dedicated to a different mm-hmm. character, a different comic.
So what was your favorite part of that exhibit, Henry?
I think the Doctor Strange room where it had like all the mirrors and it looked super cool.
Oh yeah, that was cool. There was an Iron Man virtual reality game too.
Yeah.
That you got to do. Do you want to tell about that?
Basically you had to move your arms or like tilt a certain way and you had to like shoot different targets and it was really fun because there was mm-hmm. like a screen in front of you and then you had to stand at a certain place.
And then it looked like you were wearing the suit.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was this little kid while you were like at the end of your turn doing it, there was this like toddler that kept wanting to run in and get in it. He was just so excited watching, like, ooh.
So that was super cool. And the building that the Pop Culture Museum is in is a really cool building because it looks like, it's hard to even describe it. It's got like this really shiny facade that's metallic and kind of
curved. And there are like reflections off of it that you can actually see better if there's a shadow over them.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And one thing that was kind of cool is you can ride from downtown Seattle up to where the Space Needle is. You can ride this monorail. And the monorail like actually goes through the middle of the museum, which is really kind of fun. It reminds me of like Tomorrowland. Well, I think it's Tomorrowland at Disneyland. And it's Tomorrow World in Disney World.
There's no Tomorrow World.
It reminds me of that. It's like this kind of retro futuristic kind of vibe to it.
Yeah. Well, in the building too, like it's kind of curved. The whole thing does look very futuristic. And even like the playground kind of in the courtyard out by it looks futuristic.
Yeah, that was cool.
But the building itself, I couldn't decide if it was, I guess it was glass, but it was iridescent. So it looked metallic and kind of almost rainbow colored at the same time. It was crazy to look at.
This metallic, reddish, metallic, bluish. Mm-hmm. Kind of depending on where you were in relation to the building and the sun, it would look a different color.
Yeah, and I think it was reflecting some of the playground colors too, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was hard to say.
So we saw that. And then, so that was the main thing we did the first day, because it took us a long time, obviously, to get to Seattle. And we saw the Space Needle and around there. And then the next day we went to Pike's Place Market, which is this big market kind of near the water in Seattle. It's kind of a cool place with lots of shops. And, you know, there's like a farmer's market and a fish market. And there's a famous fish market where they yell at each other and throw the fish around.
Yeah.
They were throwing some big fish.
And then down below the, kind of below into the side of the farmer's market, there's a place called the Gum Wall.
Yes. Do you remember the name of the street that was on?
It was
Post Alley?
It was Post Alley, yeah.
I think it was called.
Yeah, although it's just a bunch of pieces of gum on a wall. It's kind of gross, but kind of cool, actually.
It's gross and cool at the same time. And it's sort of like, I don't know, it may be more gross than cool, but it's still cool.
It was a larger area than I imagined. I kind of thought it was just going to be like a wall, but it was this whole alley was totally stringy gum.
About 50 feet of an alley on both sides of the alley.
Yeah.
Really gross, but actually kind of cool.
And people would just go there and add to it all the time. You'd see people chewing gum and sticking it on the wall.
Well, a couple of the gift shops I noticed sold gum specifically, like with a little sign on it saying, for the gum wall.
It's kind of gross.
I noticed that in one of the shops.
It's kind of gross, and something about it feels sort of wrong. Like, you really shouldn't be doing this, but everyone does it anyway. So
no, it's
way gross.
And it's
expected and acceptable, I guess, in that one place.
Yeah,
but only
just
in that
one
place.
Pretty gross.
Could become art.
Yeah, it's community art.
Yeah, and that's why it's acceptable.
I still kind of have a hard time with it just because the gum doesn't like break down or like wash away ever. It's just always going to be there, and it's kind of hard to get rid of. Like, I guess so, yeah. And it probably lasts more than like paint would. If it were like a spray painting place, the paint eventually would like start to peel away and crack and wear down, but the gum doesn't seem to.
Maybe people should, instead of using paint, use gum.
On canvases and stuff?
Yeah.
Gross. There's a thought. Somebody's probably done that.
Probably. Just,
like a gum collage.
It makes a weird texture on everything, though.
Yeah.
And then we kind of walked along the waterfront and saw some of the piers, and we walked to an old early 20th century skyscraper called the Smith Tower. That was kind of fun. So at the time, it was like the tallest, when it was built in the early 20s, I think.
It's the first, third tallest.
It was the first skyscraper.
Skyscraper west of the Mississippi at the time.
Yeah.
It was Seattle's first skyscraper. And, you know, today it doesn't really seem that tall because I think it's only like 34 stories tall.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other buildings in Seattle that are taller. But it's kind of cool because it's got a lot, they kept a lot of the old architecture and the old elevator. And you get a pretty good view from the top of it. And that was fun.
And they still like repaired the elevator when it needed repairing.
Yeah. It's been like the cords.
That's a good thing too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not like on the old cables or anything. I liked that as you went in, it wasn't just here, tour around and see it. And here's like a dry little card telling about it, just the facts. But they had all these like character cards from these people that actually occupied the building in the 1920s. And it was set up kind of like a how to host a murder mystery. Yeah. Or like a live clue game.
Including like some of the people that were, like the early residents of the building were like gangsters and kind of criminals and crooks and stuff. So yeah. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
And the telephone operator, the switchboard operator that would eavesdrop. And I'm assuming that she probably gave some testimony to the, you know, the feds or whoever was prosecuting these guys.
And then we walked over to Chinatown and I had some really good Chinese food in Chinatown at like a dumpling house. And then we got on the train. We got an Amtrak train at the King Street Station in Seattle and rode a train all the way from Seattle to Portland. What did you think about Portland?
It was very, as you described it, funky and like
it's a funky town, isn't it?
Almost, but in a good way.
Yeah, it's funny because here in Texas, they talk about keep Austin weird.
Mm-hmm.
In Portland, they say keep Portland weird. So it's kind of like funky and like a lot of artistic people and kind of
quirky things.
Quirky things, yeah. What did you like in Portland? Anything you remember?
I forgot what I was going to say.
The one thing that I liked, they have this really big Japanese garden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Portland Japanese Garden is really cool. And the one of the things I think is really cool about it for me personally is Portland is a sister city with Sapporo, Japan. And I lived in Sapporo for over a year. So I really like Sapporo. It's one of my favorite cities. And it's like a sister city to Japan. So they've got this big Japanese garden. And it kind of, the way they've built it sort of reflects like kind of what it's like in Japan and particularly like Sapporo, Japan. So that was really cool. But it's a really beautiful garden. And it's kind of up on this hillside. So you kind of have to hike up to it a little bit. And it's, I don't know, it's just really cool.
There are the tall redwoods.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And then they planted things kind of lower too to kind of keep it to scale so that it all felt...
But at the same time, it looks very beautiful. It's a very traditional Japanese garden. So like if you didn't know you were in Oregon, you might think like that all the plants were from Japan.
It felt like a garden that we've walked through in Japan before. It reminded me of a couple of places we'd visited.
And then right across the street from the entrance to the Japanese garden, there's this big rose garden.
Yeah.
And we were lucky because while we were there, all the roses were blooming.
Yeah. Most of them.
Most of them, yeah.
Yeah. And you just, like, step in and then smell an amazing smell of all the like, thousands of roses.
Yeah, thousands of roses. Probably, like, hundreds of different kinds of roses, right?
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
They call it, like, the International Test Rose Garden or something like that.
Rose Test Garden, yeah.
Yeah. So they can try out different types of roses.
So what did you like there? What did you enjoy about the Rose Garden, Henry?
I thought it was really beautiful and smelled good. Those were the two main things.
Did you like kind of the amphitheater area there?
Yeah, that was cool.
He was running up and down the stairs, and I took a whole bunch of pictures, and Google made kind of a funny little movie of that for me. Like, put it together as an animation where he's just running and bouncing up and down the stairs.
Yeah, like, they're like these big, like, stair step things right next to our normal stairs, but I took the, like, huge, like, step
things. The great big steps.
And just, like, jumps down each one, and it was really cool.
He kind of looked like Mario jumping down the big steps.
Yep. And then, like, the area where our hotel was in Portland was kind of like downtown Portland. It was kind of funky, like you say. Like, there were a lot of kind of funky restaurants. And it was really close to Powell's Bookstore, which is a really famous bookstore that's really huge. Has just a ton of books. And, I don't know, restaurants and stuff. So it was just kind of fun to walk around. And we didn't stay very long, but it was just cool. I had never been to Oregon or Portland before, so it was just nice to see a new city.
Yeah.
And I liked the weather.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the weather? Speaking of cool, it was actually cool.
Here
it
was really so great.
Yeah. There, it's just like spring weather here.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's weird because you kind of think, I think after living in Texas for so long, you think that when it's summertime, you figure everywhere is summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of get this mindset that, like, well, because it's June already, like, everywhere is going to be at least warm. But, like, in the morning in Seattle and Portland, it was actually kind of cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, you can also think about it this way. South of the equator, it's winter.
That's true.
And one of our Lyft drivers while we were in Portland said it really doesn't, a lot of people, I guess, say that summer doesn't start there until after the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Like, and it really makes didn't sense. Feel like summer. It felt
spring.
It was 60s, 70s, but not like upper 70s.
Yeah, luckily I brought only like t-shirts, but I brought a jacket. And it's a good thing I brought a jacket because I don't think I ever took the jacket off when I was there.
No.
Like, even
same
in the middle of the
me.
Day, I still had that jacket on it all the time.
Yeah.
And with the jacket, I was pretty much okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Henry? Were you a little cold?
Yeah, and I kept on wearing the jacket. Oh, and also, another thing that I liked about that was the hotel that we stayed in Portland.
Yeah. What did you like about it?
Ace Hotel.
Yeah, it was like, it's kind of hard to explain, actually. Like,
it's like this older building, and they kind of kept it looking older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just kind
funky.
Of cool. I don't know.
To me, it felt like a music venue.
Yeah.
Like, also, I kept expecting there to be, like, a band warming up in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, it was, like, an old-fashioned photo booth, and, like, it wasn't really much of a buffet, but there's, like, a small breakfast room, and they serve stuff there.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing, there are actually a few more things. Apparently, each room is different, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like our room was kind of this big concrete box with like a bare light bulb. And then like instead of having like curtains over the window, there was like this big, thick wooden barn door that you could like
slide
over the window.
There's
and also,
and also
the door to the bathroom was kind of a barn door too.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
And they had like old school keys, and there was a record player in the lobby with records.
Yeah, and a ton of records, actually. And there's also a really cool elevator. That was kind of small, but it was cool.
Yeah.
It was all like gold-plated looking on the inside.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Yeah. And a lot of the fixtures were kind of like industrial-looking fixtures and stuff.
Yeah.
It was fun. Mm-hmm. And so we got back, and then we had to travel a long time back yesterday, and I'm really tired because we got back kind of late. The thing about traveling is, like, I really like going places and seeing things and eating food, but the travel itself is sort of like, sometimes I just tolerate the travel. It just makes me so tired.
Yeah.
Henry's yawning right now.
Yeah, that's a joke.
Henry didn't even have to get up early to go to work this morning.
Yeah.
He took a day off from his job.
Did you sleep? What time did you get up?
Like 9:30. You don't know? I think it was like at least 9:30.
Maybe.
So another thing we should update people on. Last podcast we talked about how Phoebe's tweet went viral.
Yeah.
And she got like over 45,000 likes and like, I don't know,
13,000 retweets.
13,000 retweets. And that was kind of funny and fun. And we talked about how it was cool, but it really was kind of like whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Today, while we were on vacation, or today, this week while we were on vacation, Phoebe texted the group. We've got this family group chat. So she sent a message to the family group chat saying that a website called Unilad, and I hadn't really heard of Unilad before, but they're sort of like the
British
English
version
of BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
Had sent her a message saying, we want to use your story. We want to write a story about your tweet.
We want to interview you and post it, yeah.
And I was looking up about Unilad on Wikipedia. It says that it is, it was named the top Facebook page and online video channel in the world.
Hmm.
It has 17 million followers, it had 17 million followers in 2016 with 2.7 billion monthly video views, second only to BuzzFeed's Tasty channel. So actually, it's a pretty big website.
Yeah,
I had come across it a couple of times, but
I mean, it sounded familiar, but I didn't really know much about it. So I was kind of curious. And they wrote up a big story. If you go to Unilad, it's unilad.com. Mm-hmm. You can read the story. Maybe you're listening to this podcast because you saw the story, because they gave us a shout out in the story. It's got a big picture, a couple big pictures of our family.
Including one in our Christmas pajamas, which...
Yeah, which is a little embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, we had to provide pictures for them, and they wanted a picture of the whole family. We don't have that many recent pictures of our whole family.
Yeah, that was our Christmas photo from a couple years ago.
Yeah, not this last year, but the year before.
And the dog picture in that picture is not Maisie the Boston Terrier. That is Sir the Boston Terrier, our former pet.
Who died shortly after that picture was taken.
Right, that Christmas, but was one of the best dogs ever to live.
He was.
So they ended up doing the story. What did you think of the story, Henry?
It was like... It was a little bit repetitive, but surprisingly well written.
It was pretty good. Yeah. I liked it.
They did a pretty good job.
And it was liked that there wasn't really anything embarrassing about the story.
It was
besides the fact that they
lighthearted,
or that Phoebe in that story claims that we had more fun rearranging the congrats balloons than we did at her graduation party.
That's well, she kind of said that in the tweet. So
that was that was the caption for her tweet. What I liked is the little link that she sent us through the family group chat. Girls' family have way too much fun with her graduation balloons, and there's a picture of her and the balloons spelling out goats. And I think that sounds so much like an Onion article. That's hard-hitting headline right there. Oh, and then the little subheader was, she was quite surprised, which just...
It's just really funny.
It's just funny.
It was really funny.
She was quite surprised.
When she was talking about her mom, they changed it to mum.
Right.
So yeah. It's like more British.
People keep asking me, does she really call you mum? And I was like, no.
Because
she has never
an
called me
website.
Mom.
They called mom.
They changed
mom.
That to mum, and they changed all of her answers to British spelling. So like favorite has a U in it now.
Yeah. But. So that's really funny and kind of fun. I sent that a link to the story to my coworkers, and they thought it was funny.
It's a little bit funny. It's funny to me that went viral to me because it's so like just normal. Like I think that it got a lot of retweets because a lot of people could see themselves doing that or have done that before. You know,
and a lot of people can just sort of relate to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now it spells out oats.
Yep.
Yes. Now
we're encouraging breakfast.
We still have the letters up there.
They will.
Will we ever take them down?
I don't know.
No.
Maybe not.
We just want to farm those retweets.
They're now part of our family. They're part of our family culture.
Yeah.
All right. So those are our updates. Let's do some news.
Now, your tomorrow morning's headlines tonight.
I have a story about... Well, really, it's about science.
Science!
A scientific study of bees that says bees are really good at doing math.
Yeah, I think that deserves applause.
Did you know that bees can do math, Henry?
I've heard that chickens can do basic addition and subtraction.
I don't know how much they can really do math, but they can tell the difference between different types of numbers, including, and this is really important, zero.
Oh.
because a lot of animals cannot tell the difference between, like, in fact, even with people, it took people a long time to figure out the concept of zero.
Yeah, like, you can't just, okay, just imagine nothing. You can't do it.
Yeah. So this is actually a little bit of a little bit of a detour from the story, but I was interested in this, so I actually looked up some history of zero. The Egyptians had like a placeholder. The Egyptians had a base 10 counting system, and they had a placeholder for zero, but they didn't really have the concept of zero. The Babylonians had kind of the same thing. They had like a placeholder, but not really the concept of zero.
A placeholder like to designate like tens or hundreds or whatever?
Yeah, just okay. to hold that in place. Like it might be just a blank.
Okay.
The Greeks did not have the symbol for zero. It wasn't until 130 AD when Ptolemy,
Egyptian.
The famous... was he
was Egyptian, wasn't he?
He was Greek.
I thought...
Ptolemy was Greek.
I thought that he was...
A Greek scientist adopted a symbol for zero that he borrowed from the Babylonians.
He was Roman, it turns out.
Roman, there we go.
But he was born in Alexandria, Egypt.
Which was controlled by the Greeks.
He was Greco-Roman. We are all right. All of us are right.
Yes, we're all
okay.
right.
Well, I guess
he
we
sort of adopted a symbol for zero. On the other continent, in the Americas, they actually, like ancient Americans, in fact, the Olmecs probably had a symbol for zero that was later adopted by the Mayans. So they had a symbol for zero a long time ago. But it says, I'm getting all this from Wikipedia, it says that in the ancient Greeks had this big debate about whether or not they should have, whether or not zero was a number, because it says they asked themselves, how can nothing be something?
I can imagine them doing this. Quit trying to make zero a thing. It's not a thing. It's nothing. Yeah. It's not a thing.
But if you think about it now, like without zero, you can't do most modern math, right? You have
it's
to
true.
Have that zero
yeah,
there as a placeholder in the numerical order. Anyway, back to the story about the bees. So there is a experiment that was conducted in Melbourne, Australia at the RMIT University, where they wanted to know if bees could have an understanding of zero as a quantitative value and whether or not they could identify other numbers. So the way they did this is they had cards with objects on them, with a certain number of objects, anywhere from zero to five objects on the cards. And behind some of the cards was sugar water. And what they did was they tried to train the bees to go to the card that had the lowest value. So if there might be one card that has two objects and one card that has five objects, and the sugar water would be behind the card with two objects. And so the bees would have to look at the objects and decide which one has less value. But the bees could always go to the one that had zero objects. In fact, it was easier for them if it was like the difference between like four objects and zero or five objects and zero. So they figure the bees understand this concept of numerical value, including the absence of objects.
Or maybe it's just that it's not the absence, it's just that they saw the other one as, like, different.
That could be, too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they couldn't talk to the bees and ask them to do math.
You like jazz.
Yeah.
You don't. No bee movie memes. Although we are talking about bees, so it kind of makes sense.
But. So it's pretty interesting because bees have very few neurons in their brains. They have little tiny brains, but they can still distinguish between numbers and number values. So
that's
I thought
really
that was
cool.
pretty interesting.
That is cool.
Science!
Okay, Henry, do you want to do your story next?
Sure. This is a very important political story. Canadian child's distaste for salad prompts 911 calls.
For salad?
No, not for salad, for his distaste for salad.
Distaste for salad. I mean...
Although, wait, one question I have about the title is that in different countries, there's a different police, or like, first responder number, and
apparently,
in Canada, is it
apparently
still
Canada
911?
Apparently Canada has 911, yeah.
Hmm. Huh. Because I know, like, in, I think it's Britain that has 999.
999,
so
huh?
I guess both Canada and America have 911.
Hmm.
But anyways, basically, a 12-year-old from Canada calls 911 twice when his parental guardians served him salad that he didn't like.
Hmm.
12-year-olds. Those 12-year-olds.
They'll do anything. 12-year-old. Yeah, don't turn 12, Henry.
Yeah.
Actually, do. But.
Could you skip your life?
12 is not that young. I can't imagine you calling 911 on us because we fed you a salad you didn't like.
Okay, but explains it. Basically, he called 911 the first time because of, like, the reason I already say it, and then the second time just to make sure that they got his call. And I guess it says that the reason for that was that people, like, need to tell other people that, or, like, what the correct use for 911 is. And that, I guess, makes sense.
Yeah, the police wanted to get the story out there so that parents would teach their children the correct use of 911, which is not, my parents are trying to feed me salad.
My parents.
Okay, apparently there's a similar situation in Mississippi when a five-year-old... Okay, just prepare yourself. A five-year-old called the police just to make sure that the Grinch wouldn't steal Christmas.
Well, he's just looking out for all of us, right?
Yeah, but apparently he was scolded by his father, and then the police actually came just to tell him that the Grinch wouldn't steal Christmas.
Hmm.
Apparently that was after you read How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
That is pretty funny. And, okay, a five-year-old, I can kind of see it. It would be embarrassing for the parents. But a 12-year-old?
A 12-year-old.
Yeah. 12-year-old.
Has the 12-year-old gone to school yet? Or, like...
I mean, he would have to, right?
You would think so.
Yes.
Should be in, like, sixth or seventh grade, right?
Oh, also, this last part, it references previous news stories because it's about a Florida man. Apparently, he called 911 after... It's just... this is actually also twice to complain about the size of his steamed clam dinner order being too small.
I think I remember that one. Did we talk about that on the podcast? I think I remember Florida man. That story.
I don't think...
Florida man.
I don't think that was one of the stories we read on the podcast.
It must have just been one
it
I was
reading.
It rings
a bell, though.
When I was looking for stories for the podcast.
Yeah.
Called 911 because his steamed clams plate was too small.
Yeah. If it were in Canada, he could call the Canadian Mounties.
And ride in on their horses.
With more steamed clams. So I just looked up, because I was wondering which countries, like, where would you dial 911 versus some other number? U.S. and Canada is 911, and so is Fiji.
Hmm.
But most places seem to have something else. So South America, it's all different numbers.
Fiji, followed at the surface, untouched by man.
Japan, Korea, Indonesia, it's 119.
Hmm.
Or at least some places in Indonesia, it's 119. There are a lot of 999s. Hong Kong, United Arab Emirates has 999.
Is that what it is in England? Isn't that what Henry said it was?
Yeah,
in England?
I think it is. Let's see. They have it. Let's see. They have this listed by. Okay, United Kingdom, it says 999 or 112. And European Union and many other European nations have 112.
Hmm.
So.
That's.
Australia, it's 000, which kind of makes sense.
I guess. Although here, if you dialed zero, you go to the operator. Do they still have that?
I don't know.
Are there still operator assisted calls? So it used to be like when I was a kid, if you dialed zero,
someone would come
on and say operator.
But
you could
I don't know who.
Okay, operator, get me the library, and they would like dial. It would cost more to do that, but you could have an operator help you with the number.
And I did that a couple times when I was little, and really I don't know. But I don't know that exists anymore. I don't know who it would dial. Like, who would that even be?
The other thing we used to have when I was a kid that I'm not sure if they have anymore was there was a number you could call, and it would give you the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the temperature. So you dial a number and it would say, and where I was, it was from Mountain Bell, the time is 6:36.
Yeah.
Or whatever the time was, you know.
We would have to do that whenever, like, there's a power outage. And it seemed like it happened a lot
all the clocks,
during the summer. Like, there'd be a thunderstorm, we'd lose power, it'd come back on. We'd be like, well, what time is it now?
But now everybody has phones that have the time on it, so they don't worry about that anymore. But back then we used to call. And sometimes I would do it just because I was bored. I just went, I don't know.
There were all kinds of things like, I would do that.
Just because I felt like doing it. I call just want to hear the lady say, from Mountain Bell, the time is 6:36.
And then you could call back a couple of minutes later because it was a free call. You could call as many times as you wanted. There was that, and there was the movie line. I would call to get movie show times in my hometown. And, you know, I think I still remember the number. Like, I remembered it for years and years and years, the movie time.
What number is it?
Now I can't remember, now that I'm trying to. But I know, like, a few years ago, I was, like, laying in bed, and I thought of it. And I was like, why? I've forgotten so many things that I would like to remember. Why am I still able to recall
Maybe it's the you phone called number it so many for... times when you weren't supposed to, and your parents would say, don't call in the number.
No. No, they didn't mind if I called. Joking. It was fine as long as I didn't. I mean, I'm not going to like stay on there.
Back when we were kids, it was a big deal if something was local versus long distance. You had to pay more for long distance calls. Now everybody has a phone plan where it's like long distance doesn't really cost anything. But back then it was like a long distance phone call could cost like 50 cents a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So if you talk for like 20 minutes, it could be like a $10 call.
There was that, and sometimes my parents would get upset, or, you know, family members would get upset if you hogged the phone line. Like, if you were on the phone with a friend and wouldn't get off. I remember, my older sister. My older sister had lots of boyfriends and lots of admirers. So she would get these phone calls that would last, like, hours. And back then, we didn't have cordless phones. It was like this long kind of, you know, spirally looking phone cord. Twisty phone cord. And she would stretch it from the kitchen where the phone was into the bathroom and shut the door. And so I think my parents didn't like that because, for one thing, it was like the family phone and nobody else could call, you know, if she was on very long. And the other thing was like she'd just be in the bathroom for hours then. And we only had two bathrooms in our house. So that would, you know, that would make people mad. And my dad would always get after her for stretching the phone cord. So yeah, that was even though it was a local call, usually from, you know, her boyfriends or her friends, whatever. Sometimes family members would get irritated anyway, but like little short phone calls, like to get the time and temperature or to get the show times, the movie times. I mean, there were only a couple of movies playing in town, so it wasn't like it would take very long. Nobody minded really.
No. All right. Allison, do you want to give us your story?
Yes. This is awesome. This is kind of science, but it's really just more like, ooh, we're in the future now.
Kind of weird.
Kind of weird. I thought this story weird was inventions. Weird. But kind of cool. So, all right, I'll just go ahead. Inventors unveil musical instrument for unborn babies.
How did it even give it to the unborn babies?
Well, let me tell you. Okay, so a pair of Canadian music researchers, it's Canada again, developed a wearable electronic device for pregnant women that they dubbed the world's first prenatal musical instrument. And it's not something that plays music for your baby. It allows the baby to make music.
Oh, in the womb. They like kick.
Right. And they're calling it the Woomba. W-O-M-B-A. Woomba. Yeah. Yep.
It's a little punny.
It's a little punny. Okay, so Ara Pond, who received her PhD in music technology this month from the University of Calgary, and her colleague, Jonty Wang, who is working on a PhD in music technology at McGill University, unveiled the Woomba, a device that is strapped across a pregnant woman's stomach to translate her fetus's kicks and other movements into music. Pond said she first conceived of the Woomba. There we go. When she was pregnant with her first child in 2013, I thought it would be kind of fun to have him make sound. She said, I'm always interested in different ways you can interact with sound and music. The first version of the instrument just had sensors taped to her belly, which were set up to trigger sounds on a church organ. Can you imagine that?
So you think about like
A church tree?
A pregnant lady with a big pregnant belly. And then it has like little sensors spaced around the belly and she wears it. And so if the, it's like, you think about like a little baby inside the belly, like playing drums. Like here's the hi-hat, here's the snare, here's the bass drum. Like no matter where it kicks or hits the belly, it'll make a different sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could just imagine like your baby kicking and then,
maybe
baby kicking and then suddenly there is this.
Maybe that's why some people are born unnatural at music.
What?
Because like they do that before they're born and then they.
Yeah.
And then they do that and then. Or, and then they get born and then they're natural when they're born.
Maybe. I wonder if it like. It seems like that might give the baby like wrong ideas. Like if I kick, then I can make music. I don't know. Or maybe it just turns them into percussionists. But I can just imagine like, you know, laying around and getting, you know, the baby gets very active. Henry was like a little kickboxer when he was in the womb. And I can just imagine suddenly hearing, let's see if I can get.
To me, it seems like it'd be more like techno music, like
techno. Well, okay, so first version, it was a church organ. All right, so you really could do that. First version was just sensors taped to her belly, and whenever and the kicks were set up to trigger sounds on a church organ, but then the location of certain kicks would set off different chords. But then she right. So I wonder if that would encourage your baby to kick more. Anyway, she said the most recent version of the Woomba is more advanced, and you can have an option of hearing your child's movements changed into different instrument sounds. So it's not just the church organ now. You can do different things. You could have a techno.
So you could just program it techno to whatever
baby
kicks.
So you could program it so that your baby starts making dubstep remixes?
Yes. You could. Trap
perfect.
Screamo.
I wonder if the baby would like develop a sense of rhythm.
I wonder a little bit. Well, I don't know.
It's like you're sleeping in the middle of the night and you suddenly hear dubstep music.
Suddenly there's like this trap beat going.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So they're still refining the device. I don't think it's going to be like on Babies R Us shelves yet or... I don't know. No, is Babies R Us even still around?
I don't know because Toys R Us.
Toys R Us. Yeah. So I don't know.
It may have gone out of business too.
Right. Well, I don't know. Anyway, I don't know if it's in stores yet, but they hope to find a way for babies to continue to use the Woomba as a musical plaything after they're born too. So I guess you could put. I can imagine like a little like a
just
padded.
Put it up on a blown up balloon.
I don't think that would be safe necessarily. But you know how they would have those crib toys that were kind of soft and squishy and you would strap them to the inside of the crib and they could kick it and it would make like squeaking noises. And there was a mirror on one of the ones we had. I can imagine like that being something like that where you kick it and it makes
they
noises.
They could make trap remixes.
Right.
And like you just wake up in the middle of the night and hear trap music.
It's true. Now this is probably the moment that my screamo joke would have been like the right time for that, but we had some screaming babies for a little while.
Yeah,
they're making
music.
Some babies like to yell, and then some babies just really like to kick when they're in the womb, like Henry.
All right, so that is news. Let's do a hypothetical. I found a pretty good hypothetical. Found this off of Reddit. I kind of like this hypothetical. It's been a while since we've done a really good one, but this one goes like this. You are being offered $10 million, but of course, there's a catch. For the rest of your life, you will be constantly pursued by a snail. If you are ever touched by the snail, you'll die a painful death. The killer snail is going... is going for you at all times, but at the speed of a snail. So you could go to a different country and try to forget about it, but eventually it would show up. No one else knows or can know about the snail, which you only see, which only you see.
Just carry your salt. So you can't have someone
kill it for you, nor can you kill it by, for example, crushing it with a rock.
But what about salt?
So you can't kill it. It's going to be pursuing you. It's at a snail's pace your whole life. So do you take the $10 million?
I mean, I could somehow get someone into, like, dropping salt by, like, accidentally bumping into them.
Can it go in vehicles? Like, if you crossed an ocean, would it ride a boat over?
Would it?
Or a plane?
I think the way this is written, it's assuming that this is an amphibious snail. It can, like, crawl across the bottom of the ocean. And eventually it'll catch up to you. It'll take a long, long time.
Well, I think...
But eventually it'll catch up to you.
I mean, how many years would that take?
They'd have snail phobia.
Well, would you be able to recognize... You'd have to ask people. Oh, gosh. If only you could see it, you'd have to... Like, every time you saw a snail, you'd have to ask, can you see that snail?
Maybe you just wouldn't talk to anyone about it, because they'd all think you're crazy. There's an invisible killer snail that's after you all the time.
They can't figure out. Well, you can't tell... They can't figure out.
That's one of the conditions, is you can't tell anybody about it.
Well, no one else knows about the snail. Which only you see.
Then who gives you the $1 million? A snail?
$10 million.
$10 million. I don't know. It's a hypothetical $10 million.
Or maybe you would need. Maybe the snail. You steal it from the snail, and the snail goes after you.
The snail is after you.
Or you just cover yourself in salt, so that the snail will be like, "I'm going down with you."
It's still a deadly snail, though, and you can't kill it. So,
I mean,
I feel like you would need the money. You would need. A lot of money, I think, to escape the snail. To go far enough away that you would have a couple of years of peace.
Here's my plan, though. If you had a summer home and a winter home, like a summer home somewhere up north, and a winter home somewhere really far south.
What is Maisie doing?
Oh, Maisie is going crazy.
Maisie!
There's something she does not like. If you had a summer home far up north, like say in Canada, and a winter home like in Florida. Well, maybe not Florida. Got to deal with Florida man there. A winter home in, say,
Mexico.
Texas. But it was far enough away that you know that it would take the snail more than 6 months to get there. Then maybe you'd be okay. You'd have to time it out. You'd have to like kind of pace the snail.
But can you capture the snail and
no,
stop?
No, you can't. You can't. There's nothing you can do to stop the snail in this hypothetical. It's an unstoppable killer snail.
Yeah.
But...
Unstoppable, unkillable.
As long as you timed your movements right, you would know that that snail would never catch up to you.
So the answer is, of course, don't take the money.
Except that you'd have to... I mean...
You never actually
If you had other
know.
People in your life, you'd have to just force them just to go along with
you. Hey, I really like having a winter home and a southern
And
home.
I have to be there right now. I'm sorry about your wedding. It's too close to the snail. Can't go. Sorry about your
but
dad's
they can't
funeral.
Know about the snail.
Oh, that's true.
Right, you can't
what
tell
if,
them.
What if there happened to be a family member's funeral at a location where you knew where the snail was? I wonder
that
if
would
you
be
could
like
attach
a scary chase scene from an action
a
movie.
A GPS tracker somehow to the snail.
Yeah, that's the question. Can you track the snail?
That would be very helpful.
What if you got in an accident and were taken to a hospital and you were unable to leave and you could see the snail coming, though?
Don't take the $100 million. No, $10 million, sorry.
So what strikes me about the snail is, in a way, it's very similar to a very slow zombie.
Yeah.
It's the same sort
so
of dread,
it's a cute,
right?
slow zombie. I mean, it's dreadful.
There is a bonus part to this question. Do you want to hear the bonus part?
Sure.
Sure.
For an extra $10 million, you can choose to be immortal or almost immortal. The snail can still kill you for another 75 years. However, the snail will also be immortal for another 75 years.
Oh, come on!
Do you take the extra $10 million and extend your life another 75 years? 75 years it will be spent in dread of the killer snail.
Well, I mean, the first 75 years you would work out a system, but I wouldn't want to live that long.
Would you wake up in a cold sweat every night having snail nightmares?
Yeah. Also, what if the snail comes when you're sleeping?
Right. That's my question, is would you ever sleep at night?
Yeah. So the answer, as I've already said, is no. No.
I would be tempted. I think I could defeat the snail.
You can't defeat the snail. That's
you well. You can out.
That's
you
one.
You can outmaneuver the snail.
Okay.
You can defeat by outmaneuvering it. The other thing that I think is important to know is like, how exactly does a snail kill you? Does it crawl in your ear and
oh,
eat
stop!
Your brain?
Stop! I imagine it's more like this if its slime touches you, you're just dead.
A painful death.
Yeah, like but a snail toxin death.
Would you have snail nightmares, recurring nightmares? Probably. But maybe you get over them. Maybe
you
can normally deal with them.
You wouldn't be able to use a psychologist.
I mean, 10 million.
Think you're crazy.
10 million to live your life in fear. I don't know.
And you like you wouldn't.
So you'd have to think about things like, what if you had a job? Like,
yeah, what would your job be?
You'd have to go to work, and then the snail would find you at work.
You'd have to be able to work remotely because you couldn't tell your boss.
Or you would have to, like, what if you had to stay late to work and you suddenly got a cold, you broke into a cold sweat because you're like, I have to leave now. I have to go home because that
snail's going to be here. It's
don't want to think about that.
Three stories away now and it's coming up the stairs.
Yes, yeah, use the elevator.
Well, maybe it's coming up the elevator. Anyway, it's heading for me.
If it's coming up the elevator, do you use the stairs? If it's coming up the
and you're on,
wait.
You're on the elevator, it no. can stop at each floor. That snail
wait,
could
one
just
second.
Press the button, and then
I
you would see the doors open, and there's a snail waiting for you.
I know how to stop the snail. You put it in an elevator. It can't reach the buttons, and it can probably like slime up. But if it tries to go through, it's too slow, and it'll get crushed, meaning you won't kill it, but the elevator will.
It can't be killed, though. That's the thing.
Well, yeah,
that's
but
one of
all
the
you
conditions.
Have to do is go into a building where the only way up is an elevator. That's
but if it,
well,
can,
it can't be killed
if
by
it can
you,
follow
you
anywhere,
can't kill it.
It can get
can
through
go up
an
the
elevator.
Sides of buildings, haven't you seen them?
Well,
yeah,
yeah.
It doesn't even need
the
elevator. Doesn't need to ride inside the elevator. It can be on the outside.
But
I didn't
pull
this story,
you.
But there was a story about a raccoon that climbed 26 stories up the building. Did you ever see this?
Was it like a vengeful raccoon, like the snail?
It was just
was
a raccoon.
It out to
it,
get
I
you?
Think it was in Minnesota.
It wasn't
in,
after
like, in
anybody,
Minneapolis,
though?
Wait.
It became kind of an internet hero, I guess.
Why like, did it?
I don't know. It wasn't really clear, but for some reason it scaled this building 26 floors up and then had to be rescued.
Hmm.
Something not right.
So wait,
that.
One second.
No, that's not right.
One second. If you're going to steal $10 million from a snail, first question, what's the snail going to do with the $10 million?
This is clearly a snail of exceptional abilities. He probably would, you know, invest it and travel the world looking for you.
Well, yeah, but if you were to steal it from him, first ask, will you spend it on something good or something bad?
I think part of it you're going to have to invest so you have the means to support yourself.
You would have
while
to.
While you're being chased
you
by a snail.
Might not be able to hold
life.
Down a job.
Yeah, so you wouldn't get the full $10 million.
You gotta buy
so
that,
I think just leave
you
the
buy
snail.
That summer home in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I think we'll just leave the snail and let it buy whatever it wants with its $10 million.
Yeah.
Instead of stealing from it and it being you, murderous.
You don't want that snail after you, for sure.
The vengeful snail.
Mm-hmm. The unstoppable like... vengeful snail.
Yeah.
Do you have any more hypotheticals?
Snail
nope,
of
that's
death.
The only hypothetical we have. So that means there's only one last thing to do on the podcast, and that is...
Three words for you. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Okay, so for treat yourself, I have something called half pops. These are, they're kind of popcorn... Like the popcorn didn't pop all the way. They're called half pops, curiously crunchy popcorn in two flavors. One is butter and sea salt, and one is aged white cheddar. These are really weird. I don't know where these come from.
There's an animator on YouTube that's talking about how much they like half pop popcorn.
Yeah.
William has joined us, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey, William.
Hi, Will.
But yeah, half pop popcorn is really good.
I don't know what the deal is with these. I don't know who makes them, but I saw them in the store, grabbed them. I guess it's just the Half Pops company.
Hmm.
I'm very skeptical about these because, in my mind, popcorn should be big and fluffy. I don't like the little unpopped popcorns at the bottom of the bag.
I like those are the best.
Ones.
The half popped. He's talking about the unpopped
big,
ones.
Fluffy popcorn.
No, the half popped ones are the best.
So I'm very skeptical about this, and I don't like stuff that gets stuck in my teeth.
Yeah,
and I feel like these will get stuck in my teeth. But
I'm a little skeptical because I wonder, like, are those going to be good if they're not hot? I like the little bits at the bottom that are like partly popped but not totally popped, but they have to be hot.
I do think that. I do think the half-pop popcorn shouldn't just be sold altogether. I feel like they should just be something that's, like, really rare in popcorn. It's like getting a bowl of, like, just marshmallows from Lucky Charms.
Well, the half-pop company disagrees with you. They're selling them all together, these half-pop pop. I wonder how they do that. How do they make it so they're all half-popped? I don't know.
I think there's a special patented
formula.
I think they look wrong to me.
I poured some into my hand. They look wrong. They're not fully popped.
I think how they did this was they made a bunch of popcorn. They only put the fully popped popcorns in the bags. They sold those, and then they got the half-popped ones, and then
maybe
put those in there.
Like the leftovers from other popcorn bags?
I'm going to pass some of these around. I'm going to mute the mic so we don't chew into them, and we're going to try them out. We're going to start with the butter and sea salt flavor. All right, what do you guys think of butter and sea salt half pops?
It tastes exactly like Triscuit.
Yeah,
it tastes a lot like Triscuits, yeah.
They kind of remind me a little bit of Corn Nuts.
They remind me of Corn Nuts. They're not as ridiculously hard as Corn Nuts. They're like a little softer.
A little bit, but they're still very crunchy.
And they do get stuck in your teeth like popcorn.
Yeah.
They're good texture.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Henry?
The flavor's okay.
I think I rate them okay because the flavor's pretty good, but they didn't really get this. They made it too crunchy, and they don't taste like half-popped ones.
I think it's just right. They rate it delicious.
All right. Henry, or William, calls it.
Yum, 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 yum. Delicioso.
Henry, you're going to say it's okay.
Yeah,
and I think I agree with you. I think I believe it is. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's okay. I think it tastes good. I think the crunch is really good. I'm annoyed by how much of it gets stuck in your teeth.
Because,
like,
really does.
Fluffy popcorn doesn't as much.
I think
one of my least favorite things about unpopped popcorn.
I don't think how much of it gets stuck in your teeth should be a valid.
But it's part of the experience.
It's true.
But, like,
it's
lots definitely of things get stuck in your teeth, like caramel.
True. And the caramels that are so hard and so sticky, I don't like as much.
Well, yeah.
Let's try the aged white cheddar flavor and see if we have any different opinion of them. All right, aged white cheddar flavored half pops. What do you think?
I think I figured out what was wrong with both of them, and it's that the normal popcorn parts are still crunchy.
Yeah. So it's like crunch, really super crunchy all around.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I think sometimes I like white cheddar popcorn, sometimes I don't, and because of that, I think I'm going to rate this one okay.
Yeah, I think it's okay also.
Like, sometimes I really like white cheddar popcorn, sometimes I just, I don't know.
I actually don't mind the flavor. The flavor's not bad. It's not. Sometimes white cheddar can be overpowering in a snack. I thought the flavor was fine.
Yeah.
I just have the same thing I thought about the butter and sea salt, which is it's just too crunchy and gets stuck in your teeth.
I prefer butter and sea salt. I like the texture, but
I think the texture is fine. I think I got a couple more really hard ones than I did with the first flavor, so probably just randomly. So they were a little harder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just okay.
This has been a pretty mediocre treat yourself.
I guess if you really like crunchy things and you don't like the fluffiness of popcorn.
Is anyone else having problems like feeling like there's some stuff stuck at the back of your throat now too?
I
always get that with popcorn.
I just want to drink a whole bunch of water.
There's like a husk of popcorn like in the back of your throat.
Stuck to the skin of the kernel.
Yeah,
that's how I'm feeling right now.
But
I might even downgrade that to a meh.
The thing is, I love half pop popcorn. I know other people do, but I feel like having an entire bag of it is just wrong. Like, you need to, like, search for it inside the popcorn bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
These bags aren't that big.
The little crunchy parts at the bottom that are half-popped are good because there's just a couple of them. And you're like, oh, bonus popcorn at the bottom.
But I feel like it's kind of wrong in the same way that, like, edible cookie dough at grocery stores are wrong.
Yeah. Because it should be, like, an occasional bonus treat, not a...
Yeah. Or, like, boxes of just Lucky Charms marshmallows.
It's good because, like, you don't get that often, so it's like...
Because it's rare.
Hey, yeah. And you appreciate it more.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is for a very specific person. And on the bag it says, half pops, not rocket science, just half pop popcorn. Popcorn minus fluff plus crunch equals popcorn perfected.
I don't know.
I feel like that there are people out here there that would really like this. I'm just not one of them. I think the fluff is the best part of the popcorn.
I feel like if you love corn nuts, if you love corn nuts, you'll probably like this.
Yeah, and the half popped ones are good because, one, they're really rare, and I'd actually have a full bag of them, but I think the main part is that they're soft and crunchy, but these are just, like, crunchy just throughout. Hard,
yeah. I'm guessing to make these, they just have to, like, heat it up a certain degree and, like, maybe heat it in certain directions. Or maybe they just have to, like, heat one little and then, like, put it in the bag, heat another one a little and put it in the bag.
I don't know. I don't know how they make them, but they do.
They do.
And you might want to check them out. I just thought they were okay. We all kind of agreed they were okay, except for William thought the first one was delicious. So that is Treat Yourself, and that is our podcast. Thanks, Will, for joining us for Treat Yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mom and Henry, for doing the podcast with me. And thank you to everyone who's listening. If you are listening, let us know. You can tweet us at TTD Podcast on Twitter. You can send us an email at talktodadpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Talk to Dad Podcast. If you really want to help us out, the best thing you can do for us is you can go onto iTunes or Apple Podcast and give us a 5-star review. Anytime you subscribe, rate, or review us, it helps the podcast. It helps us get the word out to the podcast, because really we're just doing this for fun. But the more we have a bigger audience, the more fun it will be for us. So if you can do that for us, that'd be fantastic. And this has been a lot of fun, and we will see you later. There's time for love.